Welcome to the Unblocking Crypto Podcast. This podcast is not financial advice. It's meant for entertainment purposes only. These are just the opinions of a couple of rambling wrecks.
Welcome back to episode 212 of Unblocking Crypto. Hal, good to see you.
Good to see you, Jason.
And so I'm just getting back from El Salvador, and we can talk about that at the end. But the Bitcoin price has not been fantastic to talk about here lately, so maybe we'll start off talking a little bit about some of the frustrations there.
Yeah, I mean, when I was in El Salvador a couple of years ago, the Bitcoin price was higher than it was when you went just now. So that's unexpected. But this is the time where I don't pay attention to the news as much. I find, like, it's just frustrating for me because I read a lot of, like, man, okay, there's more. We'll talk about this, the good news now. And then the price just doesn't respond. Like, bear markets are like that, right? In bull markets, even when there's bad news, the price goes up. And then in bear markets, when there's good news, the price goes down or stays flat. So yeah, I mean, it's pretty frustrating. But, you know, all of the macro level, high level indicators and things that are driving the price of Bitcoin up are still there. So the investment thesis is still the same.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. You talk about, I mean, Bitcoin's under $65,000 now. It had a huge, drop. 5% drop in a couple of hours isn't really huge anymore for Bitcoin, but it dropped about 5% in 2 hours on Sunday. I think it's hovering in the sub 63 or something like that right now. What's crazy, for the first time ever in Bitcoin's history, it had six straight weeks of negative losses. It also had six straight closes below the 100-day moving average. And then it had three consecutive closes below the 2021 high. So, this is kind of wild right now, what's going on. But during all this, the whales are the ones that are dominating all the inflows and buying all the coins right now. So while everybody else is scared, the guys that know what they're doing are buying it left and right.
Yeah, and in addition to the whales, Jane Street just came out with their latest disclosure. In quarter four, they added another $276 million worth of IBIT shares. So they're up to 20 million shares of IBIT, like one name was 700 and some odd million dollars. So you got Bitcoin whales that buy, you got Jane Street. Like, these are people you don't want to be on the other side of the trade against, right? So like I said, I mean, everything's continuing to sound good as far as being a Bitcoin holder, except the price.
Yeah. Well, one of the other things that happened is the Clarity Act is still somewhat moving forward, and there's still a lot of question marks around it, but the White House hosted their third meeting on the Clarity Act, and pretty much what's come out of it is one of the big compromises is that firms will not offer yield on idle stablecoin balances. So the crypto companies have been kind of pushing this for a while, and I think as an average American or average individual, that is great for us. But it is something that is effectively off the table, apparently. Maybe there's still ways that they can tie some of those rewards to activity or network participation or something like that. But right now, it's a little frustrating. The banks seem to have won another one. I mean, there's penalties that will theoretically get up to like $500,000 per violation per day on this. So it's a little wild. I guess the good news to all this is the ethics around Trump's family is not as important as the stablecoin yield. So I think that one is moving to the back burner a little bit. And there's a lot of people that are talking about come April, this should be possibly on Trump's desk. I don't know if I believe that at all. I think even Polymarket has the odds of it passing. I mean, it fell down to like 44%, and I think it's back up to like 52%, right? But they had a March 1 deadline that I think Trump, the administration had set to get this moving, and we are, what, 4 or 5 days away from that? And it is not looking like anything's going to happen by then.
No, I'm super cynical about the ability for anything to happen. I mean, like, yeah, it feels like we're back to the old regime, you know? Just start wars here, let wars continue forever over there, do a little president killing in South America. You know, it's like just we're back to normal. Like let's let the banks run the show so that people can't earn interest on their money, so the banks get their profit. I mean, we're back to like the uniparty running the show. And so, you know, I guess the good thing is maybe as long as like the people at the top are starting to position themselves into Bitcoin or getting their bags filled, maybe that's getting us closer and closer for them to allow this innovation to do its thing. And then while they'll certainly benefit from it, so does everybody. Even if on the stablecoin side, which, you know, is not a big deal for me, but it is a big deal in general. You know, that's good for everybody. And if they, you know, if they've got to position themselves, I don't know what they got to do, short the bank or protect the bank so that their money coming in from the lobbies doesn't stop. Not, you know, whatever they got to do. And then when all that stuff gets settled, then I'll be a little more optimistic that they'll pass some legislation.
Well, you talked about innovation and what is actually happening that's kind of interesting. The CFTC just announced who they're going to name to their innovation advisory committee. And I think it's like 35 people. It's going to help weigh in on how the commodities watchdog will oversee the role of breakthrough technologies like AI and blockchain technologies in the markets. I think they came out and said that the IAC work will help ensure the CFTC's decisions reflect market realities so the agency can future-proof its markets and develop clear rules of the road for the golden age of American financial markets. So super exciting for the CFTC to be somewhat bullish on all of this. And if you look at some of the guys that are on this, or guys and girls, you got people from Ripple, like Brad Garlinghouse is on there. Chainlink Labs CEO Sergey is on there. The CEO of Uniswap is on there, Hayden Adams. You got executives from Bullish and Coinbase and Crypto.com and Gemini and Kraken. Some of the platforms like Bitnomial and Robinhood. You got the two guys from Polymarket and Kalsheet. And then even some of the VCs that are in the crypto space are on there as well. And on top of that, right, you got some of the TradFi giants. So the CBOE, the CME, the DTCC, NASDAQ, and the Options Clearing Corporation have people on there too. So, man, it sounds interesting. Now the question is, with 35 people, are they actually going to get anything done and provide any good guidance to the CFTC? That is still to be determined, but it will be exciting if they do.
Yeah, and, you know, let's let the CFTC have a crack at this. The SEC yanked it around for a long time and, you know, kind of did their thing as far as putting roadblocks in the way. And I'm happy to give a little bit, you know, more authority to another regulating body and see how it goes. Because, like, you just have to try stuff. Like, that's all of this stuff's about, is just trying stuff. Go to El Salvador, try to spend Bitcoin. You know, go to a stake exchange, spend Bitcoin. Go, you know, self-custody, try that. You know, that's what this is. And you know, it's the same thing when the internet first came out. It was like, oh, you know, try sending an email. Try to make your own website. You know, and it's like some people latch onto it and it really makes sense and some people don't. And so, you know, well, this to me, it's like this is just kind of on the other side of the coin. Like, all right, let's try to get a regulating body that gets it. So I'm all for just trying things out.
One of the other things that we've talked about in the past is some of the states and their strategic Bitcoin reserve bills. Missouri has thrown their name back into the hat again. They tried last year, didn't really work, but Ben Keithley just introduced a revised version of his House Bill 2080 in Missouri that I think has changed a little bit. It would allow the state treasurer to accept gifts, grants, donations, bequests, or devices of Bitcoin from Missouri residents and government entities. It would also allow the treasurer to purchase and hold Bitcoin using state funds. If they do any of this, there's a five-year threshold where they're not allowed to sell, transfer, or do anything with those holdings. And then afterwards, they can move some things around. It'll be in cold storage and all that good stuff. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. The proposed date for this to happen would be, I think, August 28th of this year, which would be exciting to see. They modified it from last year's bill and made it a little bit more detailed. And I think their hope is that people will donate more so than them actually buying but at least it gets them started in that.
Yeah, I'm on board. Like, it, you know, these states are starting to try things. Texas has actually made a purchase. You know, so if you're Missouri, I mean, it's like everything else. You'd rather be on the front end than wait around and be last. So go ahead and jump in.
Well, I mean, they seem to be kind of changing the game. One of the things they did last year is they signed a bill into law that allowed them to deduct 100% of the federally reported capital gains from their state adjusted gross income. So when they sold crypto and had to pay capital gains on it, they could deduct it from their state gains. And
well, that's something
that was kind of pretty interesting, right? So, I mean, they're definitely leading the charge on states out there from that perspective. And I guess it'll be interesting to see what happens there.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, like, you know, these bear markets, a lot of stuff gets done because, you know, I mean, one of the reasons why they're not as worried about the Trump, you know, family benefiting from it was like the price is kind of down. So, you know, you don't feel like other people are getting rich. If that emotion where other people are getting rich and you're not, it's a very powerful emotion. It's very, people get really angry. And right now, you know, that's not what's happening. So, you know, now they're that side is like, yeah, whatever. It doesn't matter to me. They're losing money, these dummies. Now, 5 years from now, they're going to be right back where they are. But, you know, that might be part of why things can get done in a bear market. Like, oh, you're just playing with this toy that's going to lose your money. You go for it.
So another thing that happened, I think last week, that is somewhat flying under the radar right now, and Coinbase is the one that helped implement it. They are rolling out agentic wallets, which is a wallet infrastructure specifically designed for autonomous AI agents. So now AI agents, which are autonomous bots, can interact with the web, independently hold funds, send payments, trade tokens, earn yield, and transact on-chain. And they'll have built-in security guardrails to prevent misuse, which could be really interesting. We've been talking about this for, probably about 6-7 months now, and now it's finally happening. So this is creating a whole nother level, right? And with these guys, with these AI agents out there, they're probably going to hold something that is decentralized. And one of the best options out there right now is Bitcoin. So it's just going to create another way or another push from who's going to be acquiring Bitcoin as these start to grow bigger and bigger.
Right. And an AI agent is almost definitely going to do what it can do to hold on to Bitcoin and find ways to hoard it. I mean, if their objective is to, you know, basically increase shareholder value. I know, like, if you have an agentic AI that's got access to your wallet, you're not telling it to spend all your Bitcoin, right? You're kind of, I've seen a lot of stories about people who are like telling an AI that, hey, your only responsibility is to increase the value of this stock trading account. Go for it. And then they just let it roll. So, you know, same kind of thing. We've said it before, like, AI is going to want to use Bitcoin. Like, it's not going to want to use the dollar.
Yep. No, I mean, and it's just starting, right? So it's going to start small and it'll grow. And shoot, I think there's a lot of people that are just scared to use AI in general, much less an AI agent at this point. So that's a whole other issue and a whole other level of next step to have to take for most people. A quick break from the podcast to talk about a little PDF I put together for everybody. I've been in crypto since about 2018 and made a lot of mistakes. And the one thing I always get asked is, what would you do differently if you got in today? So what I've done is created a PDF that talks about the 10 mistakes that I've made and how not to make those mistakes ever again. If you're interested, you can check the link in the show notes or go to www.jasonexplainscrypto.com/10 and get access to that PDF. That's the number 10, not spelled out. Back to the podcast.
Coinbase was also in the news. We've talked about Base, which is their incubated Ethereum layer 2. They are pivoting away from using Optimism, which is the current layer 2, and they're going to kind of involve their foundational software and move to a unified Base operated stack, which, I mean, it's kind of a big deal, right? To leave Optimism and do your own thing,
the reason they're doing this is they want to move to base specific ZK proofs. Right? We've been talking about ZK proofs for a while, and as no surprise, they want to get closer to that. Sounds like they're planning a hard fork to do that at some point. It'll also add Fusaka support, which is the Ethereum upgrade. And then they have two more hard forks after that to help further reduce Base's relationship with Optimism. And I think it's going to be timed around Ethereum's Amsterdam update, which I know you're paying so much attention to, right? But yeah, so it's still moving forward, and all these guys are learning and growing and trying to be better for the future.
Yeah, I mean, that's the name of the game right now. Like, learn, grow, figure stuff out. I mean, you don't know what the secondary effects of it, like trying stuff, is going to be, right? I've put me on the list of, you're not doing any harm, so give it a shot.
X was also in the news. They've been talking about these smart cash tags and being able to roll that out onto your X feed, right? I mean, a lot of people have been able to use that for NVIDIA and some of the big guys, but they haven't been able to do that with some of the smaller microcaps. And what X is saying is here pretty soon that the API using this will allow for these real-time cash tags so that pretty much any microcap or any crypto indice or stock or whatever that you want to track will show up in there, and it should be pretty freaking accurate from all things considered. Now, they aren't going to be the ones that are going to be trading this at all, right? They're not handling any trade execution or acting as a brokerage. Right now, it's just showing you the data, which is a start. And I know probably X wants to get to the point where you are doing everything through their app, but this is definitely going to be a place where now you can go to them and get the most up-to-date real-time information probably faster than anywhere else at this point.
Yeah, I mean, that's my go-to is X whenever there's a president that's abducted or assassinated, or there's a cartel member who's assassinated in like an airport under siege. Like, my move is straight to X, man. I don't Google anything. I don't look anywhere else. I just try to figure out I watch a video of somebody who's actually there. And it's like, okay, this seems real. So I think it's for a certain population, at least, it's a pretty well-trusted source. So you start to do cash tags and other stuff, and you know, you kind of leverage that trusted or that confidence into the next product, then yeah, I think that makes sense.
We've been talking about some of the national trust banks a little bit here in the U.S. Crypto.com just announced that they received conditional approval from the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency, so I think that's exciting for them. Stripe and their platform, the stablecoin platform Bridge, got the same approval as well. So we're seeing these federally chartered national banks come more often to some of the crypto companies. So that will make things more exciting. We'll see how much access they have to some of the master accounts on the Fed, but at least they're getting access at that point.
Yeah, you know, like I said, this might be a time where things can get done a little under the radar as the price is down. Crypto's kind of not getting a lot of attention on the grand scale of what's in the news.
So I don't have a ton of news about stablecoins other than everybody thinks it's going to grow like hotcakes over the next couple of years. World Liberty was in the news for their stablecoin. Of course, World Liberty has some Trump family ties, right? They sent an alert on Monday, I think last week, that there was a coordinated attack against their USD1 stablecoin. So the dollar peg stablecoin briefly fell to 0.99707, but then kind of returned back. And apparently there was attackers that hacked several of the World Liberty co-founder accounts. They paid influencers to spread FUD and opened massive World Liberty shorts to profit from the manufactured chaos. But it didn't work, right? So surprisingly, USD1's sound mint and redeem mechanism and full 1-to-1 backing kept it pretty much close to par. So I guess that's good to see that they didn't get depegged, because we've heard a lot of those horror stories even after being attacked by someone. So I guess good for them.
Yeah, losing your peg and falling apart and crashing stuff's bad in general. So don't do it. Good work.
And then the other thing from a stablecoin / ETF perspective, ProShares brought out their Genius Money Market ETF last week. The first day of trading had $17 billion on Thursday, which if you compare that to the first day of the Bitcoin ETFs, it was at $1 billion. So it was kind of wild that this is gone so big, and I don't think anybody was expecting this to happen. But hey, maybe this is where if you put money in there, maybe you get some sort of return there, right? If they're calling it a money market ETF, I don't know how this happens, but it's maybe that's the way to get your rewards is putting it into a money market ETF.
Yeah, I took a look at that and kind of read through it a little bit. I didn't act on it. I know I didn't move any money around, but. Yeah, man. Go for it, dude. The ETFs being like this proxy for a way for people to get into crypto seems to still have legs. You know, the coin treasury company angle seems to be ice cold right now. But the ETFs, man, they seem to still be real popular.
Well, speaking of the treasury companies, let's talk about that. So let's start with Strategy. I feel like, as always, they just made their 100th buy. It was one of their smallest buys, 592 Bitcoin for just under $40 million. But I mean, this falls what last week they bought 2486 Bitcoin for about $168 million. So they're now sitting at 717,722 Bitcoin, which is crazy.
That's what I'm seeing. And their average buy price is about 76,000. The current price is well below that. And it doesn't matter. Like, I think that there's a lot of people that are in kind of traditional finance that are, they can't understand that they've structured their debt and they've sold the equity and they don't have a liquidation price. They do have a liquidation price because they've got a little bit of it, but it's like $5,000 Bitcoin. I mean, it's arguably an unachievable Bitcoin price. So, But Strategy, I mean, they're still doing their thing. Like they got a lot of good stuff going. They got, I think Bitcoin for corporations is this week, so they'll be putting out good content there. So yeah, I mean, like if you're like, man, I wish I would have bought Strategy when it was at $400 a share. Like, man, well, you know, it's one of those things. This could be a little buying opportunity to get in the game.
Well, I mean, it's interesting. We're talking about money market accounts at a few percent, and Strategy has what their stretch product that's at 11%.
Yeah.
So, and stays at par. I mean, pretty much the same thing as the money market, just a much better return. So it'll be amazing if that continues to take off the way it has. It, even during the downturn, it hasn't really had any issues. So it's proving during this that it can work. And as soon as Bitcoin goes up, and it's not going to make it go down, right? So that's going to look even better.
Yeah, I mean, that's the way I see it. You've got an opportunity to get into, you know, into these positions. I mean, it's just bear market opportunity buying, and we'll see who does it.
Yeah. BitMine bought another 51,000 plus Ethereum for about $98 million. They now hold still over 4.4 million Ethereum. They're about 3.66% of the circulating supply, although they do have unrealized losses of about $8.1 billion. So it's not great, but it's half of what their current value is too.
Yeah, I mean, they're just a victim of timing, right? I mean, They're going to have to wait another cycle, but, you know, the first time Strategy was buying, then they kind of, their first ever purchase was a pretty solid, but then they bought into the teeth of the bull market, just like what BitMine did. So
El Salvador did the same thing.
Exactly. I mean, like, so did I.
Yeah.
Like, that's got to be the most common way to buy Bitcoin or Ethereum or anything else is the first time you buy it, you're buying right into the teeth of some FOMO hyperbolic price increase. Now, this last cycle, you know, yeah, there was a lot of Bitcoin that was purchased above 90,000. But it's not like the price ran to 200 and then dropped back down to 70. I mean, that's kind of where things were going in 2017, 2021. So, you know, these guys, this new round, you know, they don't feel quite the pain that we all felt Now they it was a little safer, so they probably went in on with a bigger chunk of their net worth. So they may be feeling it in that way. But yeah, I mean, it's welcome to the club, yeah.
Yeah, so ProCap Financial, which is OMP's Bitcoin treasury firm, they just announced they're going to buy back their shares, and they did, just because the MNAV is so low. They bought about 148,000 shares. So their ticker is BRR, BRR, valued about $360,000, which I think their, what is it? Their market cap is $202 million as of this writing, but all of their holdings and cash and all that stuff, minus the debts, currently sits at around $305 million. So what Bob pretty much came out and said is that Nero would buy a dollar of their stock for approximately 65 cents last week. So that's a great deal that most people are going to want to do, and that they're going to continue to do that as long as the market thinks they're going to give them a discount to their MNAV.
Yeah, I mean, there's quite a few companies out there. I think I want to say Metaplan, it's got a solid. What is Thrive? That one's got below MNAV. But it's, there's a, I'll be honest, man, there's like fully diluted, there's a couple different ways to measure it, so I may be wrong there. But yeah, I mean, look up and down the list, man, it's a buying opportunity. And if Bitcoin strategy companies and are like a proxy for the coin market, then this is like buying stuff in the altcoin winter. So
yeah,
I wouldn't be surprised if you see some things moved like once we kind of come out of this. And I mean based on the kind of the dynamic of this bull market, I would think that we come out of this in a different way or faster, or you know, I would think we come out of this bear market in a different way because we came into it in a different way. So we'll see.
Well, so the miners out there too, so like Bitdeer, they were also a digital asset treasury company that had about 2,000 Bitcoin at the end of last year. They have sold off all their Bitcoin. I think they just reported back in, 4 days ago, February 20th, that they've had an eight-week drawdown on all their Bitcoin. Even the stuff that they're mining, they mined about 190 Bitcoin in the past week and sold the entire amount, including the last 943 Bitcoin that they had. So they're down to zero on their balance sheet from Bitcoin, which now they're the largest publicly traded miner that has no Bitcoin on the balance sheet, which is kind of interesting. And I mean, shoot, you look at the network difficulty for Bitcoin, it jumped 14.5% in this last epoch, which, I mean, granted, the one before that, it dropped 11%, right? So, but it's erased that entire difficulty reduction in one epoch. So yeah, it's kind of wild. I think the hash price is, fallen below $30 per petahash per second per day. Bitdeer's gross margin declined to 4.7% in Q4, and they were 50% more than that a year earlier. So mining in Bitcoin is becoming a lot more difficult, and Bitdeer said that they wanted to evaluate some land acquisition to grow their business in a handful of other ways, right? So not only just mining, but they're doing a lot of ASIC development, data center buildouts, and kind of the high performance computing and AI cloud services too.
Yeah, I mean, the miners are in kind of an enviable position. They've got Bitcoin that they can always flip on, and if they can make more money doing something else or increase shareholder value doing something else that isn't just mining Bitcoin, then they can do that. So that's, you know, whether it's returning power to the grid and like when they're in a bad situation on the grid, or whether it's doing AI data center work. Yeah, I mean, that's the Bitcoin mining business used to be like cutthroat, tough business. You got to drive your costs down as much as you can because you don't have any control over the market price of Bitcoin. And now it's like, you got some flexibility now. And that's something that market did not have at all.
Well, and there's a couple of large operators that are doing pretty much that. I mean, AI is becoming such a big thing that Bitfarms just announced that they're going to wind down their Bitcoin operations, mining operations throughout 2026 and 2027 and convert their Washington State facility into an AI-ready GPU as a service hub, right? So I think that's going to be like a $128 million upgrade deal for them. But them and like Iran, they're doing all these GPU cloud agreements because AI compute is way more stable and contracted, right? I mean, we're seeing an incredible AI growth that's going to be happening for the next 5+ years at least, right? So these guys have the ability to do it. Good for them, right? I don't think it's going to stop Bitcoin at all. It's just going to make the mining difficulty get adjusted more often.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, the Bitcoin network is built for this, so mm-hmm. it won't be a problem.
Yep. So I did see some interesting stuff. I know you probably paid attention to this Board of Peace a little bit over in Gaza that Trump has, I guess, helped with. And I guess their focus is Gaza, but they are proposing a Board of Peace stablecoin that will be a token pegged to the US dollar that will not replace the shekel, which is what Israel's currency is over in Gaza, but it would support digital commerce, healthcare payments, education services, and other essential transactions. So the goal being this is to argue that digital transactions could reduce the reliance on cash and increase transparency and restrict Hamas's ability to generate funds. So I'm kind of intrigued to see how this goes. I think this makes sense. We've had this problem of sending the Taliban $40 million a week for I don't know how long in cash. And if you could get rid of that and do it all on some sort of digital currency, then you can't hide it anymore by saying, oh, we don't know where the cash is. And yeah, now it becomes kind of open that, hey, this is where the cash is going. And now we know where the problems are.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, and if you start doing things that are kind of on the Israeli side and they're pro crypto, that could really help change some things on the political side in the United States, just based on how. So, yeah, regardless of anybody's opinion about all the political stuff, that the political baggage that comes with a story like that. Yeah, if you can show that there's a use case there on a state level. Oh, yeah, good.
Malaysia has actually been in the news here too. Their central bank just announced plans to launch 3 initiatives this year that will involve local currency stablecoins and tokenized deposits. So I think the first one will be their ringgit, which is their currency, a stablecoin there, a settlement initiative, right? And then the other 2 projects will focus on tokenized deposits for payments. So, man, exciting to see someone like Malaysia get involved in this, and they're doing it almost before a lot of other people out there. So yeah, good for them.
Yeah, that's another kind of area of the world that we touch on briefly, but not, you know, it's not like they're no El Salvadors, you know. So yeah, it'd be good to see some action over there.
Yeah. Thailand nearby is advancing plans to integrate crypto into the country's regulated derivatives market. So that's kind of a big deal to see the changes from Thailand's SEC formally recognizing digital assets as a legitimate investment asset class eligible to underpin regulated derivatives. So it could potentially enable futures, options, and other contracts as well that are tied to Bitcoin and on their futures exchange over there. So good for them.
Oh yeah, no, I'm on board with that. Like, the more it gets kind of, I don't know if it's like paralleled or integrated into kind of the everyday financial tools, then the more comfortable people get using it, and then, you know, the more adoption you get. So, yeah.
France was in the news again. Their, I think, second wrench attack already happened this year, if not more than that. Apparently 3 armed men tried to rob a French Binance exec. They tried in 2 different locations, but couldn't find them. They ended up taking 2 cell phones from 1 location, which the police used to help track them. And then they got caught on tape boarding a train in Lyon. So yeah, kind of a mess over there still. I was reading something about how a lot of these kidnappings are being done by kingpins and other countries that are just reaching out to people in France and getting them involved to go do the dirty work for them. So yeah, it's kind of wild that it's happening. Still,
yeah, and it doesn't seem like I'm hearing about France starting to kind of play defense against that. I mean, you know, you talk about the United States not being a friendly jurisdiction for crypto and, you know, building a company, and you can't But man, if you have a problem like this going on in your country, like this is a deterrent, a pretty major deterrent for people. Like, yeah, sure, maybe France has a legal framework that's pretty good for like a Bitcoin or even a crypto, building a crypto company. But man, if you have this hit in the news, like, I'm not moving to France. I'll work remote.
Yeah. It's wild, that's for sure. All right, so I know Ethereum is probably not your favorite thing to talk about, but I do think there's some interesting stuff going on that I wanted to bring up. Vitalik, although he's not the best spokesperson, he does understand a little bit of what's going on, and what he's kind of talked about is building this cypherpunk principled non-ugly Ethereum as part of this future vision of one of the largest on-chain ecosystems, right? So he came out and said he's actually, I think someone had scrolled him on X. So he came back out and said, what I'm actually trying to do is something even more ambitious. I want to create a cypherpunk principled not only Ethereum as a bolt-on to the present-day system in a way that's tightly integrated and interoperable as possible, and then grow it over time. In the meantime, making sure Ethereum itself gains the cypherpunk and simplicity properties that just necessarily have to be system-wide. Examples such as persistence, CK prover, friendliness, consensus properties, yada, 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 right? So this is also coming on the heels of the Fossil announcement, which is the fork choice enforced inclusion lists, which means that on the next hard fork, the consensus layer will force consensus nodes to put through whatever the transactions are, no matter whether they believe it or not. So it's helping with the censorship resistance issues, right? I think it's called EIP 7805, which is what Fossil is. And I think that will be good because it'll force validators to include all the transactions. So that's kind of exciting to see. On top of that, there's also an account abstraction upgrade that will enable native support for smart wallets, multi-sig, quantum resistant keys, and gas sponsored privacy transactions without wrappers. So if you look at both of these, it's kind of hardening Ethereum, which is exactly what I think the priorities for 2026 were for Ethereum. Vitalik also wants to push to make a lean Ethereum. So he wants to reduce some of the technological complexity and bloat through a full network redesign, which I think it's going to use ZK proofs. So I think his beam chain is what he's calling it, would be a ZK native from the start, and it would enshrine ZK EVM proofs directly onto an L1 validation scheme, right? So, and then there's also looking at a long-term goal of swapping out the Ethereum virtual machines for RISC-V as Ethereum's native virtual machine, which would allow for a better support of a wider range of programming languages like Solidity, Rust, C, also offer some greater zero knowledge support too. So the way he kind of described it was Ethereum has already made jet engine changes in flight once, which was the merge back in the day. We can do it four times more with state trees, lean consensus, ZK EVM verification, and VM change. So yeah, it'll be very interesting to see. I know everybody's kind of counted out Ethereum in the past, but they don't seem to be dying. They still seem to be growing and changing. And I think this all sounds good right now. Whether or not it can be done or not is probably still taking a lot of work, but I'm still a believer in Ethereum, and there's a lot of assets that are tied to that network. So I think things will overall look good.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I feel like that was a long way to say Ethereum's going to make some changes and they think it's going to help them out again. And this is like, you know, it happens quite a bit. And so far, I feel like for the most part, it does make them better in general, but it's like more complex and another thing. And, you know, I'm getting less and less Ethereum centric. Like I favor Ethereum less and less over time. And that doesn't mean it's bad. It just means I'm getting busy, and it just seems like there's a lot to keep up with, you know. Bitcoin, you can learn in 40 hours, and then you pretty much got it. And then you can just learn some ancillary things, or you end up learning macroeconomics, or you end up learning, you know, about the history of money or the value of sound money and, you know, all this other stuff. But then Ethereum, it's like, all right, let me figure out what they're trying to do this time and what changes they're going to make and what do I think about those changes and what are the risk vectors that are those changes, you know, allow that maybe when I think of them, I just, that's not for me, you know, like I'm good.
No, I think we've talked about it in the past where it doesn't make sense to put everything onto a single chain in general anyways, right? So I don't think Bitcoin is the only thing that will ever survive and be able to do everything on the Bitcoin network. It just, it can't handle it. With Bitcoin, you're going to have to put things on layer twos in general, right? Ethereum is trying to be kind of the alternative to Bitcoin when you want to do a lot of the smart contract stuff and things like that. So there are some advantages to the Ethereum network for certain things. I don't think Ethereum is ever going to replace Bitcoin in terms of a place to store value, right? But there's also some great things that Ethereum is doing and has done and sounds like will be doing in the future to continue to grow and exceed expectations of what's needed in the marketplace. And I think at this point, you if you're not changing, you're dying pretty much at this point to kind of keep up with technology. I mean, one of the big problems we're seeing with Bitcoin is everybody's worried about quantum resistance, right? So there's a ton of FUD going on. And until Bitcoin really has an answer, when does things start to pick up and everybody trust Bitcoin again? And unfortunately, we're seeing a lot of people move over to Ethereum from Bitcoin. I shouldn't say a lot of people. There are some people that are moving over to Ethereum just because they're still kind of questioning what the long-term reaction will be when someone is able to take Satoshi's tokens because they aren't quantum resistant.
Yeah. No, I'm not saying everything should be on Bitcoin. I'm just saying Ethereum is losing my interest in, you know, with all these changes and things. As far as the actual like software, what it can be built on, what it's good for, you know, strengths and weaknesses. Yeah, there's too much non-overlap on all of that stuff. So, you know, Ethereum's got a place, Solana's got a place. You know, their overlap is more significant. You know, they're more competitive. But yeah, I mean, I'm not a maximalist that thinks everything should collapse into Bitcoin. You know, that's just, I think that's unrealistic. So yeah, I'm cool.
Well, speaking of Bitcoin, so I did just get back from El Salvador and got to experience a country that theoretically has Bitcoin almost as an official currency, right? So I got to talk to a lot of people down there and what their views on Bitcoin and just politics in general were happening. And it was interesting to kind of get the backstory on Bukele and what he had done. And I mean, if you look at El Salvador, they had gone through this civil war for a lot of years. The communist side actually ended up winning, right? And Bukele was part of this communist side, but he was kind of a wolf in sheep's clothing that as soon as he got elected, he completely changed all his thoughts and made El Salvador what they are today. And there's a lot of the younger generation that are pretty freaking pumped about what's happening with El Salvador and the Bitcoin adoption. Even though a lot of them don't really understand it, it is way better than kind of what they've experienced in the past. So I went to El Zante, which is Bitcoin Beach, and most of the people there, you're probably 5-10% of the people are using Bitcoin pretty consistently. What's interesting, there's another city further south or east, whatever you want to call it, in the mountains called Berlin, that apparently it's close to about 60%+ of the businesses there are using Bitcoin for their day-to-day transactions. So there's a ton of Bitcoin people that have moved there. It is cooler year-round, 10 or 15 degrees cooler. So it's one of those that I'm excited that El Salvador is still exploring that, and they seem to be pretty excited to get Bitcoin and talk about Bitcoin compared to when you walk around the States and hardly anybody understands what's going on. And these are people that don't know much about, I feel like, much in general, but they understand Bitcoin better than most of the rest of the world at this point.
Oh, yeah. And they actually have like a supportive infrastructure for Bitcoin too. So like, I enjoyed my time there. I'd be curious to go back and see kind of what the changes would be like. And, you know, when I was there, it was still kind of growing and adopting and things like that, where now what seems like they've had more time for adoption. They've had more time. I mean, we're at a higher price, or we have seen higher prices. So, you know, that's please pull people in. And it's just like every other group of people. Like, people get in, some people drop out, a lot of people stick around, then they get another round. So over a long enough track of time, I think you'll see a lot of people in El Salvador embracing Bitcoin, at least as a savings tool, you know, not necessarily as a spending money kind of way. But I mean, you and I both into El Zante at this point, and it's a pretty cool place. Spend Bitcoin, everybody's got a surf town vibe. Like, everybody's cool, nice, friendly, and it kind of fits the kind of Bitcoin ethos. And there's some commonality for everybody. And I haven't met anybody that's into Bitcoin that I haven't had a lot in common with. They're open-minded people that are like, can identify problems and solutions, and that's kind of my kind of people.
Yeah, it was interesting talking to a handful of people, just asking them how they like Bukele and what they thought of presidents in the U.S. too. And a lot of the comments I got back were like, we actually kind of like Trump. It was about to be really dark for you guys if he didn't win. That's interesting. You're seeing that coming from experience, what communism was like not too long ago. Yeah, so kind of wild.
Oh yeah, man. How, everybody's got political opinions and whatever. The longer I kind of continue down this path, the more I just don't care about politics. Like, politics converges into the same trash can for me.
Yeah, no, it was definitely intriguing to see they're paying probably more attention than we are about American politicians these days.
Right.
So, yeah, but fun trip. Yeah, my kids are already excited and wanting to go back. So I'm not sure when that's going to happen, but maybe one day.
Yeah, my kids would go back. So maybe we could do a podcast together in El Zante one time.
Yeah, no, that would be good. One of the guys I was talking to, I was like, oh, yeah, do you need to get a place to do a podcast? I was like, well, maybe.
That's pretty cool.
Awesome. Well, Hal, as always, good catching up, and let's talk again next week.
Sounds good, Jason. Thanks a lot.
See you.
If all of these crypto conversations leave you with more questions and you're looking for answers, I've created a product that dives into most of those answers, including why crypto, how to set up a cold wallet, and some of the more advanced strategies for dealing with crypto. Check the link in the notes below, and hope to see you there.